Extend Christian greetings to each one gathered here this morning. I'm happy to be here and to worship with you, and been encouraged thus far. As Brother Tim was in that devotional there, and in 1 Kings, like preachers can be sometimes, you know, if a devotional leader gets close to his own passage, and he's maybe going to pull some thoughts from him, he starts getting like, okay, how's this going to work out? But I think it'll go together very well. But I do want to go look at Solomon a little bit this morning as well. But before we go there, I'm not going to start there for a passage. My passage to start with is Philippians 3. But maybe I do a raise of hands. How many of you have ever been to a doctor and had to do the pain scale of rate your pain from 0 to 10? Raise of hands. A lot of people have, okay? Now, I don't know. I've had to answer that question already, and I know, well, I almost need that chart like they have there for the little children there that have a frowny face with tears or the straight face or the smiley face, because I don't know what letter to put there on it, you know? And so we think about that. My mind, the reason I brought that up is because I'd like to think about our Christian life now. And I'd like to reverse that scale a little bit. 10 being really good. Serving the Lord with all your heart. Giving it all to the Lord. On fire for the Lord. 10. 0 is bad. Not even serving the Lord, maybe. Now I want you each to think about your own spiritual life, your own spiritual journey, and give yourself, I won't ask you to share it out loud, but give yourself a rating on it. Is it a 5? Is it an 8? Is it a 10? You got that number in your head? We'd hate to give ourselves a 10 because there's always room for improvement, right? But why don't we? What's standing in the way of giving ourselves a 10? Let's turn to Philippians chapter 3. One of the reasons why, I don't know whether you gave yourself a 10 or not, but one of the reasons why sometimes we may hesitate to give ourselves a 10 on our scale of how we're serving the Lord is because we see weaknesses in our own lives. We see areas of need of improvement. I do in my life. But are we improving? Are we striving to get to that 10? Are we doing all in our power to get there? Philippians 3, verse 13. Brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this is the one thing I do. Forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forth unto those things which are before, I press toward the mark for the prize of high calling of God in Christ Jesus. Let us therefore, as many as be perfect, be thus minded. And if in anything ye be otherwise minded, God shall reveal even this unto you. These are the verses I want to think about and to springboard this message. In pondering, as we give ourselves a grade on our serving Christ. These verses, Paul is writing to the Philippians, and he says, I'm not at that 10. I want to be at that 10. I'm pressing toward it. That's my goal in life. I'm going to be a 10 for all I can get. And he's pressing toward that mark. That is his goal and focus is Jesus Christ and it is heaven. Now, there's one little thing I want to pull out of these verses in verse 15. Right after Paul gives that disclaimer that that's his goal in life. He also says this in verse 15. And if you Therefore, let us read again. Let us therefore, as many as be perfect, be thus minded. And this is the part I want you to think about. And if any, in anything ye be otherwise minded, God shall reveal even this unto you. Now that rating that you gave yourself sometimes can come because in your own mind, the devil is playing tricks with you and saying, you need to serve the Lord better. You're maybe down there in that 1-2, and you know that there's nothing standing between you and the Lord and that you're doing the best you can. I believe that last verse, part of verse 15 fits for you. You see, everybody is different on their rating of themselves. And so I want to give that disclaimer because there's people that are sensitive to that and they think that it needs to be perfection and they don't rely on the grace of the Lord as they ought to. And so there's those people. And I want to just encourage you, if you find yourself in that place, bump your rating of yourself up a little bit. Because God, if there's something that actually is in need of improvement, God will bring it to you. Okay? God will reveal it to you. But I also realize that there's other side of the scale, is that there's also people with a thought process that they rate themselves at a 10, and they maybe are down there in that 5 range. They need to do better. And so I want you to just give that as a thought to ponder. I was driving yesterday past the strike that is happening in the correctional officers, and there was a sign that one of them was holding up that hit me. I was like, what does that sign mean? The sign was this: 70% equals, but it had a slash through the equals, 100%. What the sign was saying is 70% is not 100%. And I know there's reasons they say that. But that sign, as I was pondering for this message, that sign hit me a little bit because 70% is not 100% can be for us in Christian life. Are we giving 100%? That's my question. Are we satisfied with 70%? Paul writing says, "Brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forth unto those things which are before, I'm giving it 100%. I'm pressing towards that mark." I've titled the message this morning, "What Are Your Goals?" What are your goals? In the natural sense, we have career goals. Goals are important in life. Goals will get you out of bed in the morning. Goals will drive you through life. They're good. But goals that are in the human standpoint, for goals for life, that are for material wealth, material gain, things of this life, are so temporary. But they're needful. Businesses know this. They often have goals in a business. Where do they want to be as a business? And they ask their employees to plug into that. And so they push for that, for their employees to help with that and to reach the goals. And I just found some things that businesses often push for is clear goals. They have well-defined goals, easy to focus on, easy for the employees to grasp a hold of. They're achievable, realistic. They often have a deadline on it. They want it by a certain time. They also do goals of planning and strategy. They take a big goal of the business and they break it down into smaller goals, ones that are attainable, and create plans to get there. They get people, the employees, motivated into it, and they pull people into it. Let's go. And encourage each other and drive each other on. And there's discipline, consistency. They take care of themselves. They share those goals out. You know, they help discipline each other to reach those goals. When a goal is not being able to be reached, the business will often look at it and say, "Oh, let's be flexible. Let's move this goal. We can't quite reach that, but we can reach another one here." And they'll do whatever in the resources that needed to reach the goals. And so that's in the worldly, or in our world today, in the maybe more of a business aspect. But I think some of that applies to us as Christians in our Christian life. And so what are our goals? We asked young children sometimes, at least when I was growing up, we had a school paper that came out, and I know I remember a couple times as a young child they were asked, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" Y'all like that question when you're little? What do you want to be when you grow up? Well, I maybe didn't mind it so much then, answering that question, but I go back and read those questions now if I ever pull out one of those old books, and yeah, you know, it's kind of a lame answer I gave. Well, it's good for young children to ponder what the goals are they have in life, and that'll change many times in the growing up years, but it helps us even as teachers or parents even to look at and say, oh, that's what the child would like to push for in life. And so I want us to think, what are our goals spiritually today? Is our goal today 100% serving Christ with our all? What am I focusing on in life? What am I trying to get out of life? I've said that personally for myself, and that's the question that I ask myself, but I want you to think about that. What do you want out of life? What are you focused on? What are you striving for? What are you trying to get out of it? Pleasure and entertainment? Wealth of the world? An easy life? Or is it something more? What drives you? What motivates you in life? I said I was going to turn to Kings and to Solomon there. And that's where we want to go now. We're going to look at the life of Solomon. And so you can turn in your Bibles now to... We looked at what Paul wrote to the Philippians. Now you can turn your Bibles to 1 Kings. And I want to just think about Solomon a little bit and ponder some of his goals in life. 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 5, we know Solomon was that king that came after David. It was David's son. And he's building a house to the Lord. And verse 5, "And in Gibeon the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and the Lord said, 'Ask what I shall give thee.' And Solomon said, 'Thy servant has showed unto thy servant David my father great mercy, according as he walked before thee in truth, and in righteousness, and in uprightness of heart with thee. And thou hast kept for him this great kindness, that thou hast given him a son to sit on his throne, as it is this day. And now, O Lord my God, thou hast made me servant king instead of David my father, and I am but a little child. I know not how to go out and to come in, and thy servant is in the midst of thy people, which thou hast chosen, a great people that cannot be numbered nor counted for multitude. Give therefore thy servant an understanding heart to judge thy people, that I may discern between good and bad, for who is able to judge this thy so great a people?' And the speech pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. And the Lord said unto him, 'Because thou hast asked this thing, and have not asked for thyself long life, neither hast thou asked riches for thyself, neither hast thou asked the life of thine enemies, but hast asked for thyself understanding to discern judgment. Behold, I have done according to thy words. Lo, I have given thee a wise and understanding heart, so that there is none like thee before thee, neither after thee shall rise any shall rise like unto thee. And I have also given thee that which thou hast not asked, both riches and honor, so that there shall not be any among the kings like unto thee all thy days. And if thou wilt walk in my ways to keep my statutes and my commandments, as thy father David did walk, then I will lengthen thy days. And Solomon awoke, and behold, it was a dream. And he came to Jerusalem and stood before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord and offered up burnt offerings and offered peace offerings and made a feast to all his servants. And we can go on the next verses there and read how the wisdom that came to Solomon and how he judged the people. I don't have points for this morning's message, but I'm just going to take each one. And if you want to put a point there for it or not, but this is the first passage I want to think about of King Solomon. As we ponder Solomon's life, his goal in life was to serve God and to lead these people right. He was faced with a task of leading the children of Israel, and it looked impossible of his human standpoint. His goal in verse 9 there we read, his goal was to lead the people and that he could discern between the good and the bad. A noble calling. It was a lofty goal. Solomon's goal was to do the best he could in leading God's people with God's help. His goal was to serve God with his whole heart and give of his best in the work he was called to of leading his people. I'd like to think about that as we ponder Solomon. Bring that a little bit more for us today. Do you remember that conversion experience, your first of giving your heart to the Lord? Your desire to serve him wholly? The desire to give him all you had, no matter who opposed? Maybe I'm the only one to experience that. But I've seen in my own life how that has wavered and gone through spells. And is it the Lord's fault? No. It's my own personal fault because I'm not staying as close to the Lord as I ought to. And I see growth in that. I want to keep growing in that. But my challenge to you is the same thing. Is your goal like Solomon's to serve him with that same commitment you had when you gave your heart to the Lord? No matter what. We need it through life. You must maintain that in your life to be victorious. Well, if we could just stop here, this message this morning wouldn't have such a negative look now. But it starts looking negative. And I can maybe apologize for it, but I don't, because I think it brings out the points I want to think about this morning. But we come to the second passage I want to look at, and that's 1 Kings 4. And verse 29, we could have read on in chapter 3 there and how God gave the wisdom to Solomon. But I'd like to look here at verse 29, and God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding exceeding much, and largeness of heart, even as the sand that is on the seashore. And Solomon's wisdom excelled the wisdom of all the children of the east country and all the wisdom of Egypt. For he was wiser than all men, than Ethan the Ezraite and Hermon the Kohath and the son of Mahol, and his fame was in all the nations round about. And he spake 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. And he spake of trees and of from the cedar tree that is in Lebanon, even unto the hyssop that springeth out of the wall. He spake also of beasts and of fowl and of creeping things and of fishes. And there came of all people to hear the wisdom of Solomon, for all the kings of the earth which had heard of his wisdom. Here is a man that people, it was just such a joy to listen to him talk. He knew it. He knew it. He had so much wisdom. You talk about pretty much anything. And he just had a lot of wisdom. You didn't argue with him because he just knew. And that was Solomon here. People came from all over to hear the wisdom of Solomon. My question as I ponder the second thought here I have. His goal, remember, was wisdom to lead God's people. In Solomon's life is something changing. Was the wisdom that God had given to him being used for all the other people just to hear his wisdom and his fame? Because people came from all over to hear it. Because this man had so much wisdom, it was just a joy to listen to him and his wisdom. Is he starting to lose that 100% focus? Is something else starting to come in? Let's go to the third one, 1 Kings 7. 1 Kings 7. Verse 1, but Solomon was building his own house 13 years, and he furnished all his house. He built also the house of the forest of Lebanon. The length thereof was 100 cubits, the breadth thereof 50 cubits, and the height thereof 30 cubits, upon four rows of cedar pillars, with cedar beams upon the pillars. And it was covered with cedar above all the beams that lay on 45 pillars, 15 in a row. And there were windows in three rows, and light was against light in three ranks. And all the doors and posts were square with the windows, and light was against light in their three ranks. And he made a porch of pillars, and the length thereof was 50 cubits, and the breadth thereof 30 cubits. And the porch was before them, and the other pillars and the thick beam were before them. Then he made a porch for the throne where he might judge, even the porch of judgment. And it was covered with cedar from one side of the floor to the other. And his house where he dwelt had another court within the porch, which was of the like work. Solomon made also an house for Pharaoh's daughter, whom he had taken to wife, like unto this porch. All these were of costly stones, according to the measure of hewed stones, saws within and without, even from the foundation upon the coping, and so on the outside toward the great court. And the foundation was of costly stones, even great stones, stones of 10 cubits and stones of 8 cubits. And above were costly stones after the measure of hewed stones and cedars. And the great court round about was with three rows of hewed stones and a row of cedar beams, both for the inner court of the house of the Lord and for the porch of the house. That's a lot of reading. But you see that I read that all partly because I wanted to instill in our minds how costly of a house Solomon was living in. The finery, the expense that went into his house. I wonder as I read from the life of Solomon, was his goal starting to get a little fuzzy of leading God's people? Has the God of self started to come in a little bit? He's lost the 100% of giving and of himself to serve God's people. He's living a little bit for self. Let's go into another passage here, 1 Kings 10. You know, as we ponder that past, the last one there, all the costly building that he built for his own house, and what all he spent on self. And so there's money being spent on himself. Now we come into 1 Kings chapter 10. We have Solomon looking at wealth and materialism. Now the weight of gold, that verse 14, that came to Solomon in 1 year was 603 talents of gold. Besides that, he had of the merchantmen and of the traffic of the spice merchants and all the kings of Arabia and of the governors of the country. And King Solomon made 200 targets of beaten gold. 600 shekels of gold went to one target, and he made 300 shields of beaten gold. 3 pounds of gold went to one shield, and the king put them in the house of the forest of Lebanon. Oh, he's getting wealth and he's starting to show it off. And I believe his goal of leading the people now is changing. And I don't know when all this is taking place, but later on in the message here, I want you to think about where Solomon ended up. How did he get there? I believe wealth and his goal was starting to shift to wealth and materialism. 1 Kings 11. Here's a sad one that happened. 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 1, but King Solomon loved many strange women, together with the daughters of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Zidonites, and Hittites, of the nations concerning which the Lord said unto the children of Israel, ye shall not go to them, neither shall they come in unto you, for surely they will turn away your heart after their gods. Solomon clave unto these in love. And he had 700 wives, princes, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart. And it came to pass when Solomon was old that his wives turned away his heart after other gods, and his heart was not perfect with the Lord his God, as it was the heart of David his father. And he went after gods, other gods than the great God of heaven. What a commentary. A man that started out his life and asked the great God of heaven, just give me wisdom to lead these people. When did his goal go from 100% of serving God to not serving the Lord? His goal in these verses has now shifted from wanting to lead God's people right to doing evil in the sight of the Lord. What a serious commentary. When I read this, I couldn't help but try to bring this point a little close home to us today. Men, you can't feed on lust and somehow expect that the Lord's going to bless you. You can't feed on the filth of the world and somehow expect to be a 10, 100% in serving the Lord. Make sure you're giving yourself the right answer for what you're feeding on. But these steps have led him up to this point. He is now serving himself. He's no longer serving God's people. His focus and goal has shifted to wealth and materialism and what he can get for self. And all these strange women have taken his heart away. He's doing evil in the sight of the Lord. But it keeps going. Verse 9, and the Lord was angry with Solomon because his heart was turned from the Lord God of Israel, which had appeared unto him twice. And had commanded him concerning this thing that he should not go after other gods. But he kept not that which the Lord commanded. Therefore the Lord said unto Solomon, forasmuch as this is done of thee, and thou hast not kept my covenant and my statutes, which I have commanded thee, I will surely rend the kingdom from thee, and will give it to thy servant. Notwithstanding, in thy days I will not do it for David thy father's sake, and I will rend it out of the hand of thy son. Howbeit, I will not rend away all of the kingdom, but will give one tribe to thy son, for David my servant's sake, and for Jerusalem's sake, which I have chosen. We have idolatry, spiritual decline happening. Solomon's goal that he had at the start has now changed to the wrong goal. And he is leading the children of Israel in a spiritual decline. They're going down away from God. And his people are turned away from God because the leader has gone that way. And I appreciated the Sunday school. We ponder about leaders and their influence. fathers, where are you? Brother Willie said that we're all leaders. We're all, somebody's following us. Where are we at? How are we leading? David, Solomon's father, David, had given Solomon such an upbringing that there was blessings still happening to Solomon even when Solomon had turned away from the Lord God. But it's not going to happen in the next generation. That's what God's saying here. It's not going to happen in the next generation. I want you to think about church history for a little bit. I'm not a big scholar in church history. But the challenge is that we tend to follow that same pattern. Our fathers give us so much of a solid scriptural basis to build our Christian life on. And it comes to our generation and we start letting the decline, we start losing the focus of that 100% goal. And we start making it a 70%. We start making it a 50%. And pretty soon that percentage keeps dropping, almost unaware to us. You know the Bible verse that says a little leaven leaveneth the whole lump? And I feel that's talking about the whole congregation, but in our spiritual lives, ourselves, to be focused on anything else other than 100% for Christ, we're going to lose out. And so you take that whole history thing and you follow it on. Our fathers gave us so much to be thankful for, such a vision for church life. And now it's our turn and we can be just like Solomon and say, I don't care. My challenge is, where's the next generation going to be? If you don't give your children the foundation that David gave to Solomon, but instead you give them the foundation that Solomon gave to his son, can we expect any different? Can we expect our children not to turn away from the God of heaven? Well, how else did this play out? We can go on reading here in chapter 11. There we had idolatry and spiritual decline. Now we have division and conflict. Oh yes, even in Solomon, in all his wisdom that God gave him for leading the children of Israel, there's conflict starting to happen. Why? I believe it comes back to the fact that Solomon's goals of power, prestige, turned about, and it led to division and the conflict. You can read it there in 1 Kings 11, 26 through 40. We're not going to read all those verses. But conflict that should have never been in a nation or in a God's people that was being led by the wisest man. A man that should have been able to, that he could talk intelligently about anything. Somehow could not shift that focus to the future of the children of Israel. And he no longer cared. So that's the life of Solomon. I'm going to stop there. I don't know whether Solomon ever repented. There's a lot of people that have speculations about that. We know, we read the verse there where Solomon wrote many proverbs. He wrote many scriptures. We turn to many of them. And so I'd like to now go to Ecclesiastes. That's what has brought me to this passage, or that's what has brought me to look into the life of Solomon a little bit more. Because I've been reading in Ecclesiastes. And I've been encouraged as I read Ecclesiastes because there's a lot there. I want you to think about this. As I was studying in Ecclesiastes, I'd like to read what my study Bible says about this, the book of Ecclesiastes. We don't know, actually, if Solomon was the writer of Ecclesiastes, but there's a lot of speculation in that as well. But if you ask me, I would tell you that Solomon was the writer of it, okay? Because I do believe that he was. When you come into Ecclesiastes chapter 1, it talks about the words of the preacher or the man that's expounding to people and sharing with people. And it says about the son of David, king of Jerusalem. It just seems to me like Solomon, but people have some other thoughts on that. But as we ponder this book, I want to read something here. This book contains the reflections and experiences of a philosopher whose mind was in conflict over the problems of life. So you ponder that little clip there. This is he's saying it's a deep thinker, which would have been Solomon. He's pondering the reflection. He's reflecting on life, the experience of life. His mind's in conflict over it. And so I believe that as we ponder that, after speaking of the disillusionments that had come to him, he prevents the view of the Epicurean materialists. And this is what their view is, that there is nothing better than the carnal enjoyment of the pleasures of life. Isn't that America today? There's a lot of people following that today. And so Solomon, of course, we studied into his life. He had that. As this idea reappears all through the book, it is quite evident that the writer was struggling with it, while at the same time he was uttering profound truths concerning man's duty and obligation to God. Read Ecclesiastes and think about that. You can go to Ecclesiastes and you can pull one verse out of it, and it is such a profound truth. Well, the whole book's truth, but as you can just see him wrestling with things, he's talking about things, and then he utters a profound truth, and so that's what I like to think about. At last, he seems to emerge from his speculations and doubt, and reaches a noble conclusion in chapter 12, 13, and that is fear God and keep His commandments, for it's the whole duty of man. All right, we want to get to that here. Ecclesiastes chapter 2. Solomon writing, I said in mine heart, go to now, prove thee with mirth, therefore enjoy pleasure, and behold, this is also vanity. I said of mirth, it is mad, and I said of laughter, it is mad, and of mirth, what doeth it? I sought in mine heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainted mine heart with wisdom, and to lay hold on folly till I might see that good for the sons of men, which they should do under the heaven all the days of their life. I made me great works. I builded me houses. I planted me vineyards. I made me gardens and orchards, and I planted trees in them of all kinds of fruits. I made me pools of water to water wherewith the wood that bringeth forth truth, forth trees. I got me servants and maidens, and had servants born in my house. Also I had great possessions of great and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem before me. I gathered me also silver and gold and peculiar treasures of kings and of the provinces. I got me men singers and women singers and the delights of the sons of men, as musical instruments and of all sorts. So I was great and increased more than all were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. And whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this is my proportion of all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I'd labored to do. And I was so happy. I didn't need a thing in life. I was serving the Lord. No, that's not what it says. It's not what the proverb writer writes. And behold, it was all vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. Oh, what a conclusion to come to. You see this man speculating about life. He's just He's wrestling with the deep things of life. And all that he has. And he realized it's nothing when you figure where the end is. Verse 12, "And I turned myself to behold wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do that cometh after the king, even that which hath been already done? Then I saw that wisdom excelleth folly, as far as light excelleth darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walketh in darkness. And I myself perceived also that one event happeneth to them all. Then said I in my heart, as it happeneth to the fool, so it happeneth even to me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said in my heart that this also is vanity. Even my wisdom that the Lord gave me is vanity. For there is no remembrance of the wise more than a fool forever, seeing that which now as the days come shall all be forgotten. And how dieth a wise man? As a fool. Therefore I hated life, because the work that is wrought under the sun is grievous unto me. For all is vanity and vexation of spirit. Yea, I hated all my labor, which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the men that should be after me." Time is hastening on. We shouldn't read all this. Let's read verse 24 on down. "There is nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink, and that he should make his soul enjoy good of his labor. This also I saw, that it was from the hand of God." God wants us to do that. "For who can eat, and who else can hasten thereunto even more than I? For God giveth to a man that is good in his sight wisdom and knowledge and joy. But to the sinner he giveth travail to gather and to heap up, that he may give to him that is good before God. This also is vanity and vexation of spirit." And so you ponder that. Solomon is realizing the empty, the fleeting nature of earthly pursuits apart from God. His wrong goals in life has caused him to ponder and to think about life in such a way that he can't even grasp it anymore. Led him into a place of disillusionment and failure. Let's go to that, Ecclesiastes 12:13. That's that solid verse that Solomon comes to the end there. Ecclesiastes 12:13. "Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil." This morning, the challenge I want to leave with us is this. What is your goal in life? What is your focus on life? We can say our goal is to serve God with our whole heart. But the challenge I have for myself and for each and every one I will leave with us is, what we do, where our focus is in our daily lives, will show what our true goals are. It'll show exactly where it is. Solomon had a chance. Solomon, in all his wisdom, could have cried out to the Lord and said, "I've made a terrible mess. All the wisdom you gave me didn't do me any good. I've lost out. Forgive me." I believe God would have answered and heard, the same as he does for us today. But we must first of all recognize and realize in our own hearts where we are at in the percentage. You see, if we keep saying we're 100%, we're still 80%, and that's good enough, we will never come to the place where we say, "I need help." We'll never get to the place where we'll acknowledge our need of God's grace and forgiveness in our lives.
Don't give up. Keep pressing on. James 4:8, draw nigh to God, and he will draw nigh to you. Cleanse your hands, ye sinners, and purify your hearts, ye double-minded. Continue to draw close to God. If you find yourself in your relationship saying, it's not, my goal is not that 100% like it should be, come to Christ. Acknowledge it. I want to challenge us to press on, to be willing to humble ourselves and to say, I need to work on it. I need forgiveness for this. And to grow. Because that is where we grow closer to God. If you find yourself struggling, not as close to the Lord as what you were at one time, evaluate it. Remember, God will bring whatever it is to your mind if it's something that needs to be taken care of, and be willing to do it. Closing, I want to read a poem. It's a poem we all know, I think, but I'll read it again. It's good for us to hear it again, even if we have heard it before. The race. Whenever I start to hang my head in front of failure's face, my downward fall is broken by the memory of a race, a children's race, young boys, young men. How I remember well, excitement sure, but also fear. It wasn't hard to tell. They all lined up so full of hope, each thought to win that race, to tie for first, or if not that, at least take second place. Their parents watched from off the side, each cheering for their son, and each boy hoped to show his folks that he would be the one. The whistle blew, and off they flew like chariots of fire. To win, to be the hero there, was each young boy's desire. One boy in particular, whose dad was in the crowd, was running in the lead and thought, my dad will be so proud. But as he sped down the field and crossed a shallow dip, the little boy who thought he'd win lost his step and slipped. Trying hard to catch himself, his arms flew everywhere. And midst the laughter of the crowd, he fell flat on his face. As he fell, his hopes fell too. He couldn't win if now. Humiliated, he just wished to disappear somehow. But as he fell, his dad stood up and showed his anxious face, which to the boy so clearly said, get up and win that race. He quickly rose, no damage done, behind a bit, that's all, and ran with all his mind and might to make up for his fall. So anxious to restore himself, to catch up and to win, his mind went faster than his legs, he slipped and fell again. He wished that he had quit before with only one disgrace. I'm hopeless as a runner now, I shouldn't try to race. But through the laughing crowd he searched and found his father's face with a steady look that said again, get up and win that race. So he jumped up to try again, 10 yards behind the last. If I'm going to gain those yards, he thought, I've got to run real fast. Exceeding everything he had, he gained 8, then 10. But trying hard to catch the lead, he slipped and fell again. Defeat. He lay there silently, a tear dropped from his eye. There's no sense of running anymore. 3 strikes, I'm out. Why try? I lost, so what's use? He thought. I'll live with my disgrace. But then he thought about his dad, who soon he'd have to face. Get up. An echo sounded low. You haven't lost at all, for all you have to do to win is rise each time you fall. Get up. The echo urged him on. Get up and take your place. You're not meant for failure here. Get up and win that race. So up he rose once more, refusing to forfeit. And he resolved to lose, win or lose, at least he wouldn't quit. So far behind the others now, the most he'd ever been, still he gave it all he had and ran like he could win. 3 times he'd fallen stumbling. 3 times he rose again, Too far behind to hope to win, he still ran to the end. They cheered another boy who crossed the line and won first place. Head high and proud and happy, no falling, no disgrace. But when the fallen youngster crossed the line in last place, the crowd gave him a greater cheer for finishing the race. For and even when he came in last with head bowed low, I'm proud, you would have thought he'd won the race to listen to the crowd. And to his dad, he sadly said, I didn't do so well. To me, you won, his father said. You rose each time you fell. And now when things seem dark and bleak and difficult to face, the memory of that little boy helps me in my own race. For all of life is like that race with ups and downs and all. And all you have to do to win is rise each time you fall. When depression and despair shouts loudly in my face, another voice within me says, get up and win that race. Let's kneel for prayer.